Shooter. All right. Hello, my friends. This is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. Welcome. And I am having such a good time with our guest. We've been talking for the last 20 minutes before we press record. So hopefully I will do all of the official introductions in a proper way. But it is such a treat to have Beth Napleton here with us on this episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast, which I might add, Beth, we were talking about music in Chicago before. And today, I don't know if you know this, today is Earth Day, but it is, mm-hmm. as we're recording this, but it is also Record Store Day. So
yes.
all of our kind of rabbit holes that we were taking beforehand ring true with the spirit of this day. So if you are watching this podcast, you will notice in Beth's space there behind her is a Springsteen on Broadway picture framed. And if you all know anything about me, I am all things music, and any kind of distraction or trapdoor that I find for music, I needed a trapdoor, Beth, with you, but because we were already connecting beforehand, but I just zeroed in on that and said, oh my gosh, I have another music fan, with me. So, for those of you who are listening, just imagine the Springsteen on Broadway, logo is hanging up behind Beth. And Beth, welcome. There's so much to say about Beth and to share about Beth. She is a Chicago-based executive leadership coach and the owner and founder of Beth Napleton Consulting. She offers senior leaders in education and at mission-driven organizations a clear path to excellence through individual, executive, and group coaching experiences. Additionally, she offers busy leaders such as me and for all of those who are listening, a container and her expertise so they can expand their capacity in all areas. And we'll talk more about that later. Beth leverages her extensive experiences in education to work with senior leaders in education and mission-driven organizations to help them clear out the adult problems that get in the way of student success. She is also a national award-winning teacher and has been in the education field for over 20 years, having trained over 1,800 teachers and leaders to success. She's an alumni of Columbia University, Building Excellent Schools and Teach for America. Most recently, she served as the founder and CEO of a small charter school network on the south side of Chicago, Chi-Town, that opened in 2013. All graduates of her schools, most of them first-generation students, were accepted to at least two four-year colleges, changing their paths forever. She also has taken her leadership skills a step further. And we got to talk about this too, because you are a Clifton Gallup Strengths coach. I'm a big fan of strengths-based leadership in the books that are coming out of Gallup. They have really upped their game. She's completed the National Principal Supervisors Academy at Relay and is a former member of the Far Southside Community Action Council. Beth has been a guest on the EJT show and the Teacher Renewed What's Possible in Education podcast and hosted her own podcast, Live on Leadership with Beth Napleton. She is in Chicago with three kids. I also have three amazing kids as well, and we are both twin parents as well. So Beth and I have just become like lifelong besties and bandmates.
Totally.
And I am so excited that you're here, Beth. Welcome to the Principal Liner Notes podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Sean. I'm really excited to be here.
Part of our many topics that we'll be discussing, and our focus is you've got three tips for school leaders to build a functional and goal-oriented team. And I know that you've done work with this before COVID, and really everything that we've learned about team building and strengths-based leadership and everything that we learned in leadership or principal school change or shifted a lot during COVID. So I would love to kind of hear what those three tips are, and maybe putting it in the context pre and post COVID would be great.
Totally. Well, I am really happy to be here. And I think, you know, your bio was really comprehensive. And so, you know, I think what I would add as a little asterisk is that, you know, I spent the first 10-ish years of my career in the classroom, and I had worked in several different schools. And it became very clear to me that there, you know, first of all, I saw a lot of very talented people, not only leaving the classroom, but leaving education, right? Because they were not feeling appreciated. They were burned out. They didn't see a sustainable path forward. They wanted to make more money. I mean, you name it. And I realized that having worked under, I think, well, I had three principals in my first 2 years teaching at the same school. And then I had, you know, two others to add to the mix, that the quality of leadership really just mattered so tremendously. And so it's one of the reasons that in my work, I focus on leadership coaching development, is because I realized that after 10 years, I actually went to go work at Teach for America for a few years to learn leadership and management and what to do, because I really wanted to figure out how to make sure that I could one day start a school and help lead the adults in such a way that would really work for kids, and make sure that they had some consistency and some stability and people were able to really make a career out of it. And so when I was reflecting on leaving my school at the end of that journey, I felt like, you know, it's so hard to leave schools because you just make such an impact every day. You know, your job is so important. And I'm like, what can I do that's still going to feel as important? But I had three kids at home. I was a solo parent, and it was, you know, I had a divorce and my children's father had passed away, and it was like, something's got to give. And it was like, you know what? I could think back in my career to a few times where I had a consultant or I had a coach come in as I was principal or CEO and really helped me when I was stuck. They helped me kind of get to that next level, helped me get unstuck. And it was really so helpful. And so I felt 2 years ago, I said, let's try consulting. So I went off on my own. I remember vividly, it was August 2020. It was like the heat of school reopening and pandemic and variants and all that. And I was on a COVID road trip with my kids and calling into this meeting about reopening protocols. And I just was like, you know what? Our first class graduates in June. I was hoping to make it a couple more Junes beyond that to help these students I started with in fourth and fifth grade grow. But there is they need new leadership to lead us out. I got no gas in my tank to deal with vaccination requirements and protocols and quarantine. And I had a successor who was in place. And so I said, I think I need to stop. And so a lot of my leadership I led into COVID, and then really, I don't know, are we out of COVID yet? It's unclear, but you know, yeah. I stopped in 2021. So whenever that marked in that place, but so I think a lot of this is actually in some ways similar, but we're doing it against a different landscape where I think, you know, talent education and talent retention has always been challenging in education, but now it's just like heightened, right? We've always had interesting politics in education. It's way heightened. We've always had, right, leaders arriving in their roles, not feeling equipped. I mean, it is such an interesting field because you can really be successful in a classroom as a teacher. And then people say, great, you should be a principal, go down the path to this, do this. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you're still an Olympic diver, but you just went from the 3-foot springboard to the 10-foot platform. It's a totally different set of skills. There's some similarities. They're both in schools, but you know, you go from working with, you know, I worked a lot with middle schoolers, and developmentally I'm like, I get it. You're not at your life's best. Like, you're going to grow. We're going to learn. Like, you're having some big feelings right now. How do we work through this? But to have to do that with my adult staff, the principal was like, wait a second, like, you're the adults in the building. And it takes a different set of skills and strategies in a lot of cases. And so I work with leaders as a coach, as a consultant, and then as a coach consultant, which is my favorite, which is the combination of the two, where I do a little bit of both. And so it's been interesting. But yeah, so I would say my three things that I think are always clear is, number one, you need if someone is leading a major change initiative, or I just want to reboot this small part of my day, right? What's your vision? What's the purpose? And I always encourage people to put it on paper, and some people, the chart paper, the whiteboard, whatever, but it can be one sentence. It can be three words, but get your vision out there. what's the purpose, what's your why, right? So that way you can go back to that as you're navigating then the implementation. Mm-hmm. I think two, you need to know yourself as a leader, know your school, know your community, and know its strengths and assets and know its opportunities. And so I think that that can be gathering quantitative or qualitative data. I love using the Gallup Strengths Assessment, because if you are a leader with a lot of strategic strengths, you are going to lead differently than someone with a lot of influence or executing strengths. And that's totally fine, because you shouldn't try to be someone you're not, because then you'll spend so much energy trying to be someone different. You're not going to have time left to do the hard work of leading change. And then the last piece, and I work a lot with leaders on this, this comes up over and over, and this is an area where I think that some people were doing really well on this before COVID, and then COVID blew it all up, and then they're putting it back together. And that is really just making sure that you have clear roles and responsibilities. Who's doing what? Who makes the decision? Who has to sign off? What's the call? You know, there's like the MOCA template, there's the RACI, there's lots of like tools that can be helpful. But it is, as a leader, sitting down, okay, if we're talking about a new ELA curriculum, who are the contributors? Who am I working with? Because a lot of times the stress of working can come from not knowing where those boundaries are. So, you know, your English department chair makes it is like, I've made a decision. And you're like, that's not your decision to make, right? Or, you know, they won't make a decision and they, you know, weigh in. I don't know if I'm qualified. Well, I do want your input. And so how do you really set out clearly and say, what is every person on the team's role in this particular situation? And of course, I have a music analogy we can go to for that.
Oh, please do.
Okay. So, and it's so funny, Sean, because I always have felt like, you know, the first time I saw Bruce Springsteen live in 2007, I was like, there is so much to learn on leadership from this man. I saw an E Street Band show in Chicago at the United Center. And I was at a school where I wasn't feeling very well led. It was like maybe my 7th, 8th year of teaching. And I just watched this band do amazing things musically. And I'm not musically gifted at all. I appreciate it. I can't play chopsticks.
Oh.
And so I think, you know, when you look at the band though, you know, and now, so I really, that kind of led me down a hole. I think I just went to my 22nd show. You know, I've seen him on Broadway a couple of times. I've read the book. I'm a super fan. And, you know, it's very clear that there is a clear purpose. I mean, Bruce will say, look, if you come see an E Street Band show, our goal is to knock your socks off. We want in the first 3 minutes, you know, people put up their good money. They take time off. They get a babysitter. We want to do this. And we're going to do it in the very beginning so that you don't have to worry about, is this worth my money? And it's going to be an amazing show where we're going to take the energy of the band and the energy of the universe, and we're going to make 1 + 1 = 3, right? Something special that comes from those together. So there's the vision and purpose. Then know your strengths in yourself. Bruce is, you know, and I really applaud him. He's been very open about some of his mental health struggles. He's been in therapy for 40 years. He knows himself. He knows the dynamics. He's growing. He's learning. In his memoir, which we've both read, he talks about, you know, he actually, one of the reasons he did the Only the Strong Survive album that came out recently is because he goes, I realized in my memoir, I kept saying I didn't have that great a voice. And I thought, well, my voice is okay. It's like, right, you're Bruce Springsteen. Because he was like, my strength is really my guitar. My guitar is where I bring something to the table. My voice is fine. And then it turns out that like, he was like, so I want to do an album that's only my voice with these and bring some attention to these soul singers. But I think he really knows himself as the leader, which I think is really important anytime you're leading a team. And then, I mean, you can go, and I used to do, and in fact, I do sometimes work with districts and schools now. I do some PD around how your school is like the E Street Band. And it is one of my favorite PDs to lead. It is so fun. I used to do it with my team every year at the beginning of the year because we inevitably had some new people coming on board. And we'd always watch a clip of a show. And it was my favorite PD to prep for because I would like be like, excuse me, I can't be disturbed for like 18 hours. I'm going to be on YouTube, like picking out the perfect clip. But if you watch a show, and so I show a clip during this PD and people watch and they highlight different pieces. We talk about how one of the things that's very clear is that everybody has a clear role. Max plays the drums. Susie does the violin. Clarence and then later his nephew Jake do the sax. Bruce does the guitar. And it is very clear what people do. And there also is some clear, like, you know, during certain songs, they'll share vocals like out on the street. Yep. You know, they'll come down and they'll come over and they'll duet or, and you can see this, and even on the most recent tour, they had, you know, different parts where they have this amazing extended E Street Band horn section that comes down and does more of a spotlight. Or Eddie Mannion, I think it was Eddie Mannion, came down and did some of the singing on Night Shift, right? And so there are clear roles. They sometimes change by song. They sometimes change by context. And everybody has a role, and all the roles are important, because when you put all those things together, that's where you make the music. Bruce alone on that stage makes wonderful music, but it's very different than the sound of a full, like, 17-member band playing. And so I think that that's the same as a school. Sometimes people look to the leader, and you're the boss, and you tell us what to do. And it's like, I have a role as the principal, and you have a role too. And people will be like, you know, we do this whole thing on who's the boss, right? And the reality is, it depends on what the stage is you're talking about. If the stage is the classroom, the teacher is the boss, and that clear sense of direction and purpose. And Bruce also does an amazing job getting his audience involved. Every time they do Bobby Jean, people go like this and wave their hands back and forth, right? There's a Badlands echo. And so how are you getting your, who is your audience? How are you getting them involved? How are you getting them pumped? It is a very much a dialogue between the two. And so I just feel like, and this is, I mean, truly, I was at my last concert a few weeks ago, and I have like my phone notes out, taking notes for like future blog posts and PD. I'm like, the nuance I continue to learn from this 15 years after the first time I saw him live. I mean, it's, he's unbelievable.
That's wow. I hope that if for those of you that are tuning in and listening, this is a great moment where I feel like press pause, take go back and rewind because Beth, you just made such, and it's very similar to what I do in my book, The Pepper Effect, where we take, you know, this kind of template that you know, Springsteen, and in my case the Beatles, and how there are these kind of crosswalk lessons that you can adapt. The thing too about Springsteen, I think is, and speaking of the word adapt, and I think it's important as a leader, is his adaptability. And then somehow staying true to his authentic self. So the way that you know, we may know or listen to or experience the song Born to Run, which is like his signature song. The way that he performed it in 1975 is probably, and you've seen him 22 times over the years, has changed, you know, but still staying true to his core. And I think that's important as leaders, is this notion of agility. Like, he, you know, there are certain songs that he'll revisit and reinterpret. Dylan does the same thing. And then there are certain songs that, you know, he may change up or what have you, because of whatever it may be. But still, as I think about what you said, just a very important lesson for leaders to kind of heed this notion of building on the strengths of others, building on your core. I want to talk more about, I don't know if you can hear this in the back, we got a big thunderstorm going on right now. So for those of you that are adjusting the podcast right now, there's nothing wrong. It's just a heavy rain, if you're picking up on that. I guess the thing, you know, how does, you know, what happens when you have that resistance as a leader? So in other words, you're in tune with your, and I'll unpack that a little bit. You're in tune with your authentic self, and you're in an organization or a schoolhouse, and not necessarily push back against ideas, but we all have this kind of template of what a leader should be or what a principal should be. I remember this early on in my principal career. People wanted me to be Morgan Freeman in Stand By Me, running around with three-piece suits and a baseball bat. And I said, that's not who I am. Let me be the principal that you need, but also let me be true to my authentic self. And I find that's a challenge, my friend.
And it's an ongoing challenge because, right, different students and teachers and parents come in. And I think that one of the things that makes being a principal so tough is that everyone comes, and by everyone, I mean literally from the custodian to the kindergartner, right? Come in with an idea of what the principal should be. So even if you're leading a smaller school of, you know, a couple hundred kids, that's a couple hundred kids' ideas. That's their parents. That's the community members. That's the teachers. And how do you as a leader say, okay, what am I about? What's important to me? And what are my true non-negotiables? And then what am I flexible? Because I'm going to meet the needs of my team. I'm going to meet the needs of the community. How do I keep some energy for myself so that I can do this work over the distance? I don't burn out. And I think that that is something that I often, in my coaching, I work a lot with leaders on that, right? Is like, what are those pieces and the dynamics? Because, you know, it depends on the situation. There are places where when that board member comes, it is going to be really important to drop everything and you know, attend to them. Even if that's not how you want to be, it might take a few years to get away from that world, right? And there are other places where that's actually not an issue at all. And so if you're doing that, it's maybe because you think you should, or you saw someone do it once, or somebody else in the district did it. And so, you know, we look at, and that's the beauty of coaching, it's so one-on-one, is that you can say, like, what are the factors here? What are you afraid of? What's holding you back? What's contributing to this? Because I think so often what I see is that people have that template in their mind of Morgan Freeman or whoever it is, and they think that's the way I'm supposed to be as a leader. And I work with CEOs, I work with heads of nonprofits, right? Like, leaders in all areas have all these ideas of what a leader should be. And whenever I hear the word should, I get like this, because it's not about, you know, often I'm working with a CEO now of an ed tech company, and you know, they were going through some struggles under their founder, and she transitioned out and he came in, and it's like, well, she was this way. It's like the organization needed a change, and they picked you partly to help the pendulum swing. And so that's okay that you're swinging it and you're, you know, still being true to those kind of core values. So it is, you know, there's just so much humanity in all this. It gets hard. Yeah. It is hard. It's never not hard.
Share in your bio, and I shared about you being a Gallup official strengths-based coach. And for those who may not understand what strengths-based leadership is, I'd love for you to kind of contextualize that and explain what that is and why, my opinion, strengths-based leadership is needed now more than ever.
Yes. Yeah, no, I concur strongly. So I think that, you know, look, as humans, we are hardwired evolutionarily to see deficits, right? Like, this is probably why our ancestors survived the woolly mammoths and the saber-toothed tigers. Like, you have to be able to look at a situation and understand where the danger is. And if you don't, you are literally lunch. And so there are some really deep parts of our humanity that come in looking at any situation and seeing the deficits. So when people say, oh, I can't help it. It's like, but you're human. This is part of the human condition, right? And I think I discovered the Gallup Strengths Assessment, I think around 2008 or so. I took an assessment as part of a training. I was working for the Institute Teach for America, and I found it really useful to I was leading a team of five at the time, and we were on a larger retreat. And all of a sudden, this team of five and I had a shared language to describe that's asset-based to describe our strengths. I had some tools and resources in their books and materials to be able to say, there was one woman particularly I was really struggling with managing. I could see she had a lot of gifts, and I like couldn't figure out how to help her channel those gifts into her goals, right? Because she was missing a lot of her goals. I was like, geez, she's great, but how do I do this? And so I suddenly had some concrete tools to help with this. And I had a way of thinking about myself and my teammates in a way that felt good, because I was paying attention to the light, right? As opposed to the shadow. And so I really liked it. A couple of years later, when I opened the school, everyone took the StrengthsFinder. I did like this bootleg PD where I made like a grid on chart paper and we talked about it. And then, you know, I did bootleg PD for a number of years. Some years it was so interesting, Sean, we'd be like, well, we did StrengthsFinders last year. And what I learned is people never are like, oh, what a waste of PD. I talked about what I'm good at. Nobody has ever said that. And so we'd have new people come onto the team. The school was growing every year. So even if we had great retention, there were new folks. And so every year we'd take a couple hours at the beginning of the year and talk about strengths and do some reflection and talk about our team and what do you notice. And it was really always such a recharge, and it gave us that common framework for moving forward. So when I transitioned out of, I was transitioning out of the executive director CEO role at the Small Charter Network, and I knew I'd be going into business for myself. I saw like an email about become a strengths coach, and I was like, well, I've been bootlegging this for like 10 years, so maybe it's time I go legitimate here. And so I did a 40-hour training course. I learned about all the different strengths and how they interact and how they affect you as a manager and a leader. And I became certified through Gallup. And so, you know, I probably most often now do PD for teams and groups. So people will bring me in to help their team. I do it a lot at the beginning of the school year, right? It's a great time to start and kind of have this. Or when people are like, morale is low. And I was like, well, here's an easy pick-me-up. Is if we can spend a couple hours together and everyone's focused on what they're good at. And what's so interesting is that, you know, every part of our strengths have light and shadow. So my number one strength is something called activator. It's in the influencing category. It is about like diving in and contagious enthusiasm. And this is true of so many people, is that your top three strengths, sometimes you almost don't see because they come so easily to you. So I'm like, isn't everyone always this enthusiastic? Like, I don't actually think this is a thing. And it turns out it's not true. It's like a real gift that I bring. And so being able to really immerse myself in that gift is great. Well, the strength that contrasts with the most is an executing strength called deliberative, which is about really need to see all sides and really having all the facts before you dive in. So as part of my certification process, I had to coach people. So one of the people I coached was my father, who was the CEO of his own small business. I said, Dad, will you do this? You know, it was COVID. I was living with him at the time. I was like, hey, can we do this? Oh, sure, no problem. His number one strength is deliberative. And suddenly after, 40 plus years, both of us had this light bulb with why, when I share a major life decision, we sometimes struggle because the deliberative part of him is like, have you thought about all the pieces? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but it's going to be so great. And so it's been so interesting because the insight from that one coaching conversation, and sometimes I will do kind of one-on conversations with people like I did with my dad, that insight was really able to propel our relationship to a different and more helpful place. Because I knew that whenever a major decision came up or something that might be tricky, I could kind of say, here's the context, here's what I'm thinking of. And by the way, sometimes when I knew that I needed more of that kind of 360 review of an idea in my life, I now understood that as an activator, I needed that deliberative counterweight. My ex-husband had deliberative in him. So after our divorce, I decided we should get a puppy. This was so stupid. And this is such a classic activator mistake where you get in over your skis on something and you're like, what did I do? I now have three small kids and a puppy, and who's going to walk this? And so one of my good friends from teaching many years ago, you know, she's deliberative. And she was like, you can always call me and I will help slow you down to think about. I'm like, I can't make another mistake like the dog again. I mean, the dog is wonderful. She now lives with my sister in DC. It's all good. But it was a very scary period. Very, very hairy, I should say, for a little bit. So I think strengths-based leadership is so key. And there is just such a renewal in thinking about what's going right about a situation, what's going well, what does somebody bring to the table, and how do I channel it? And as a leader who's leading people, all of whom have skills and deficits, right? How do you look at your team in a way that's focused on their strengths? It is really recharging, right? Because you're able to start to see, oh, well, this person is so great with strangers and so friendly and welcoming. We should send them to the job fair, right? They should go meet all the new people. And oh, this person is really just so great at poking holes in all the ideas. So when I'm doing my strategic plan, can you please come in and look at this and poke some holes so I can understand? And then those people feel so seen and yes, so valued for what they bring to the table, right? And even though, because sometimes people say, well, you're the leader and you do it differently. And so no, we all bring skills and talents. How do we help celebrate those? So I really think that, you know, in any situation, and, you know, again, I would imagine Bruce is a strengths-based leader, right? He's looking at people's skills. He's looking at their talents. He's pulling them into the light. He's doing that. And so I think that there is just so much. It just is a way that I think allows you to really lead for the long haul. Because if you're sitting there thinking about, oh, this person's not great at this and this person's not great at here, it's like, oh my gosh, like that's a hard mental space to live in for very long.
That, I can totally see Bruce as a strengths-based leader and him building upon, you know, whether it's, you know, Nils Lofgren to do mm-hmm. all of his fancy acrobatic guitar work, or literally acrobatics in some
cases. Literally the term, yes, double hip replacements for Nil. So
exactly, you know, or Max Weinberg with just his phenomenal sense of time, and I mean, mm-hmm. there's so many layers to that. As to shift a little bit, one of the things that you coach folks through or serve as a consultant, it's amazing, is helping leaders navigate through adult problems. And I remember early on, when I was started off as an assistant principal, I was a young, brash, a vigorous leader, and I remember there was many pieces of advice that I had gotten from the principal I served, and she said, straight up, Sean, the easiest thing about the job is the kids. It's the easiest mm-hmm. part. No matter mm-hmm. on any given day, you may have the worst problem, the biggest fight. Kids are the easiest part. It's the adults that make this job hard. And she said real quickly after that, now don't go in guns blazing, because you have to build relationships. Just as you build relationships with kids, you need mm-hmm. to build relationships mm-hmm. with adults. It's a lesson I've never forgotten.
Really wise.
Yeah. What boy? Yeah. Miss Brooks, probably one of the best principals I've ever worked with, and I was very fortunate to be under her tutelage and guidance for the brief time I was her assistant principal. Very soon I became a principal after that. And there were days when I became a principal, those first few days were like, what was I thinking? I was working with the best principal. I was in a great school. And
AP's a great job. There's always someone to say, you decide, there's someone that, there's someone to look to in the office,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I mean, she was my Bruce Springsteen, right? I was like the Clarence Clemens, to her Bruce Springsteen.
I'm an important supporting actor, but the number of people in leadership development or APs moving to principal and people who are ready and whatever, but I'll say, there was always someone else to look to, and that's gone. Like, yeah, I get it. It's tough.
It is. So how, if someone doesn't have a Miss Brooks like I did, mm-hmm, help mm-hmm. teach me how to navigate through adult problems, mm-hmm. What is your advice for those leaders in any realm, whether it's principal, assistant principal, PLT, chair, sit chair? And again, you put all of this too in the context of this post-COVID world that, mm-hmm. that we're in right now in the profession, with quiet quitting and well-being and mm-hmm, working challenges. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that a leader has to navigate through. So how do we deal with that?
I mean, I think that it's a great question, and I think that it's so, even for folks who've been doing this for a long time, right? Well, now you've got kind of new generational expectations. I think one of the most interesting things about the pandemic is that every leader I work with is like, my staff wants us to be more flexible. And in a million years pre-COVID, we didn't think about teaching as a job that you could ever do from home, right? And so we learned that maybe wasn't the greatest idea, it was maybe necessary at the time, but it is this piece of, I think we're in this moment that is really shifting. And so, one thing that I always tell people, first of all, is that please give yourself some grace, right? You just like, if you lead a K-8 school, nobody expects you. And I don't think you expect yourself to be an expert in every content area, every subject grade, every standard. You just don't. You may be, the one you came in with, and then you learn and develop and add. But it's the same way with a lot of these cultural leadership skills. Is that there are absolutely some you come in with and there are some you grow, and that is totally part of this process. And so I think that's important. I think the other thing that I often hear leaders, two other things. So one is, I think, sometimes people can feel like, this is out of my control, or I don't know what to do. And it's like, I think about, the principal role as, or other CEOs or nonprofit leaders, all of whom I work with, district leaders, you have like you're like the pilot in the plane, right? They've got like 250 different switches, right? And I've never been trained as a pilot. It looks very intimidating to me. I'm sure some are more important than others, just like some of the levers that a principal can pull are more important than others. but they're all there and they're all at your fingertips. And if the plane, if your metaphoric plane starts to go down, right, there's a number of things that you can do to help with this. And sometimes it's as simple as tone. Sometimes it's welcoming message. Sometimes it's canceling a staff meeting to give people time. It's bringing in a massage chair. It's sometimes, and this is, I'm going to do something on this soon for Teacher Appreciation Month, is that sometimes the best gift you can give people is clear expectations, right? And just being really clear as a leader and not being, you know, the blowing in the wind with who says what and where. And so, you know, I think that you do have a lot of tools at your control. It can totally feel overwhelming. It can feel hard to distill. There is such a human part of us that reacts from a personal level, which I think is maybe diminishes a little over time, but never completely goes away. And so I think it's important to remember there are lots of things you can do. If people in your building, there's like a culture of gossip or backbiting, or people aren't invested in goals, or they think that the new curriculum is stupid, or they don't like the direction of the district, or they have conflicts with parents, like whatever it is, there are things that you can do, particularly as the leader in the building, to really help, or the leader in the department or whatever it might be. But I find that the leaders of the building really have the full array of controls, and other folks might have a section of the panel because they are working, you know, with the direction of the principal. And the other piece I always encourage people to do is, like, you know, get some help, right? Like, you don't have to do this alone. You're not a superhero. And so I just, you know, and sometimes people will think like, oh, if I get a coach, it's this money, we can put it towards this or that. If I bring in a consultant, I don't know. But look, like every education foundation in the country, I mean, these are folks who like sit on mountains of money, right? So money's not their preoccupier in the same way it is when you're leading a building on limited time and resources. But I can't think of a better person to invest in, if I have to pick one person, than the leader of the school. Because if I can help that leader, I then can affect all the layers, you know, the teachers, the faculty, the staff, the students, the families. And so with one person, I'm actually spreading that benefit out across an entire school community. And so when you think about the cost on like a per student basis, it is minimal, right? And so I think that sometimes, especially leaders who maybe haven't been around as much, or, you know, oh my gosh, this number, it's like at the end of the day, like, you, if you ask any school board president, you know, board chair, hey, would you pay X amount of dollars to have this person feel like they're more effective at their job and it's a more sustainable path for the future? Every one of them would not blink before they said yes, right? And so you need to remember that and value yourself. Sometimes principals will move mountains for their most valued teachers. And what can I do in PD, et cetera? We need to look in the mirror a little bit and apply some of that to ourselves as well, because principal leadership matters so deeply in the direction of a school. There just is nothing else, in my opinion, equivocal to it. And so I think that's the other piece. It's sometimes these adult problems, or you think, I used to be able to handle this, and now what happened? Well, there was a global pandemic. And, you know, like, it's just, it's, we're in a different world, and we're at this moment in time, and there's nothing wrong with getting some help to help you through this patch, right? The same way that, you know, Springsteen was having some issues, and, you know, he got help from a therapist, right? Right. But, like, you know, you can absolutely get, and I am all for therapy for all leaders, but absolutely, you know, there's also ways to get executive coach or consultant or coach consultant or whatever. Like, how can I get some capacity, get some help to help me out?
I think one thing, Beth, that you mentioned is the value of investing in principal leadership and investing in principals who need that empowerment. And I find too that when I became a principal, I still am, but the part of the gig, one of the parts of the gig that I love is coaching either assistant principals or folks that leadership team or coaching other teachers up. And I find it to be very therapeutic. I find it to be something that also kind of reinvigorates my core as a leader. So I would advise any principal, any leader, CEO or whatever, tap into, you know, we were talking earlier about strengths-based leadership. And if you're doing a strengths-based assessment in your building, or if you, you know, kind of notice, you know, someone that's an outlier or has a hunger for growth, you know, tune into that person and coach that person up. I love the fact that I just love those times when I could coach assistant principals, or if I got a principal intern. It was just very healthy for me. I'm being selfish, but just as I was helping that person, I always found, okay, this is an opportunity to sharpen my saw or strengthen my core as a leader, as the gig as a leader is not to necessarily get people to follow you, but also you're empowering others to lead as well, to be that little Steven, to be that Nils, to be that Gary Talent or whoever mentioned the street band for those that may not be familiar. But that's part of the gig of leadership. Like your building or your department or whatever it is becomes your classroom, and it has to be, right?
Yes. Yes. And I think that, you know, it's funny, in a couple of weeks, I'm doing a masterclass on building an internal leadership pipeline, because I think that what you're describing is so important. And I think I just posted, I forget if it's coming, but like, you know, if one of your top three priorities and your leader is not developing your team, then you need to reprioritize, because it is both. I think it can be a source of deep satisfaction and joy. And I think it's hard for me to imagine a world where somebody comes from a classroom background. You know, if you're in schools, you like to see people learn, right? Like, yeah. There's like something in the atmosphere. And so I think that is a case. And, you know, that also spreads, you know, it magnifies the power of the building. People sometimes can think, oh, I should be able to do it all, or that's on me, or it's because I'm the principal. And sometimes younger in their career. And I think that you also speak to, I actually can magnify the vision for the school, or having a more holistic, well-rounded environment, or whatever you're kind of moving towards, by really making sure that I've got this band. And one of the things you mentioned about all those musicians is like, little Steven has his own band, right? Nils right. plays his own gigs. Gary does when they're not on tour with the E Street Band.
That's right.
Right. You can, I've seen Max Weinberg do this really cool jukebox musical thing in Evanston, Illinois, where he does like requests from the crowd and he just plays and he does a little shtick. I mean, it's amazing. And so you're also talking about, you know, folks can go out on their own, and whether that's with their departments or their grade levels or whatever. But I think that is a place that can be helpful, and a place where relationships can often be very gratifying. I think sometimes people don't know how to do it. And then I'd say, hey, get help, read some books, check out some websites, learn about it, follow some podcasts, right? Get help, because, you know, again, doesn't come to you naturally. Like, it's not like you sat in the principal chair and suddenly knew how to develop folks, right? You're kind of growing and learning that. And I think that is really important to do. And because it is, you know, nobody walks in day one and knows how to do it, but I do think it. And sometimes the other problem is sometimes there is a personality clash, or they're not reaching their goals, or you're not sure they're the right person. And then it can be hard, because it feels like, am I developing this person correctly? And how is this working? Same thing. Go find some podcasts, go read some books, go talk to some other principals at the district meeting, get some help if you need to, because these are important questions to grapple with. And then of course, one of the constant challenges of the principal role is like, there's not really anyone in the building you can vent to or talk to about this stuff, right? They always say like, vent up, and like, you're at the top. And so it's about collaborative, it's about this, but in your building for, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, you have to really be taking it in. Your spouse or your partner or your best friend, I'm sure, can be a good listener, but also they have other roles to fill in your life. Right. And so how do you also find, you know, whether it's through a coach, whether it's through a group of principals. I used to, you know, meet with a group of people, like, you know, every 2 months we'd go out for dinner, who kind of had similar roles of small charter networks in Chicago, and we could just and let it out in a way that we need to, because it is so challenging. Even in the best situation, that's a challenge, right? Because even if you have a great AP and you're, it's like, there's still stuff you probably shouldn't say to them. So, you know, just under the guise of leadership. So yeah, it's a complicated part, but so, so important.
That's so true what you say about, because that's the thing, as principals, you're the only one in the building. That's you. And as much as Kirk had Spock and McCoy on the bridge of the USS Enterprise, he was still the captain. As much as Springsteen has, you know, I mean, his wife is in the band, for crying out loud.
Yes, yeah.
And that's probably the closest thought partner he has, but he's got other folks, but it's still he's still billed as Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. It isn't Bruce and Patty Scalfia, you know, as
exactly. No, you're still the captain. And in some ways that's clear. And that can be, it can feel lonely. It can feel isolating. It can feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And I think sometimes people will try to escape those feelings by being like, well, we're a team, or let me bring you along for the ride. And it's like, that actually doesn't serve anyone, right? You need to just embrace this and say, this is hard and it's difficult and I have the skills to do it and I'm ready to do this. And they pick me for a reason. And, you know, I've done hard things before in my life and I can do this, right? But yeah, it's, it is. I like that image of the Enterprise at the bow, because it feels like sometimes you're just.
Yeah, it's and again, it is important as a leader to have those thought partners and folks that you lean on that aren't necessarily yes people. I mean, Spock and McCoy gave Kirk a run for his money sometimes. You know, I'm sure little Steven said, "Hey, boss."
Steven left the band. Steven left the band in 1984. He did. He was the kind of the number two guy, and he left for 15 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that it's very key to have those folks around you, but again, I think finding folks in like-minded roles to connect with and to share with and to commiserate with and to be uplifted by, you know, that's why like podcasts and books are so important. By the way, what's on your bookshelf, or what would you recommend for that leader that may not have that Kirk and Spock or dynamic or little Steven Bruce dynamic? What are some books or podcasts that you would recommend as a coach consultant for folks?
Yes, totally. So a couple come to mind. I love the Patrick Lencioni 5 Dysfunctions of a Team and the workbook and all the different ones. I think those are really helpful for like a crash course on team dynamics. And even though it's a fable and it's corporate based, you can take a lot. There's a lot of similarities.
Right on.
And so I find those helpful. One of the other books I really like a lot is called Radical Candor by Kim Scott. So have you heard of this one? It's about the intersection of caring personally and challenging directly. And so it talks a lot about how are you, so if you have a T-chart or a quadrant, you want to be in the quadrant that is radical candor, which is you care personally and you challenge directly. If, for example, you challenge directly, sorry, if you care personally but you don't challenge directly, it's manipulative insincerity, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's another one. Anyway, I've got it right over there. But or you can be obnoxious aggression is when you challenge personally and don't care personally. So it was helpful. I read it at a time in my school's development where we were probably about 5 years in, we were growing, we were getting to expand, and there was a lot of strife. There was a lot of adult problems that got in the way very much of student learning. And so it was helpful to me to give me an access to understand, to think about management practices that enabled both. Caring personally came very easy to me. I find that most educators, that comes pretty easily to them. That's not what they need to work on, but it's the challenging directly that can be very difficult. And we had a lot of meetings and decisions where people would agree at the table and then leave the meeting and, did you hear this? Did you hear that? Disagree in the hallway. And we had to flip that culture to disagree at the table. Conflict is healthy. You need this pushback. We need to disagree. Let's get into it. Just because I'm the principal doesn't mean I have the best idea. And then agree in the hallway in front of the team and staff. And so that book kind of gave us, you know, one of the things I'll sometimes work as a coach Sultan with on leaders is they say, I need to shift my culture. And that's one of the things I do a bunch of, you know, I do a data analysis phase and we collect surveys and we talk about stuff. But often one of the areas that will emerge to focus on is we need people to say what they like mean to people's faces. Like they need to go to the source, right? Like you need to be able to disagree. You need to be able to understand that like you can do that and actually still be a great coworker. Mm-hmm. And how can we actually work to shift the culture in this building so the adults do that? And then we work together on a plan and then I support them through the implementation of that plan. So that's the Coach Sultan piece, because I'm doing the planning and the work and the data synthesis and the focus groups and all those pieces. They're coming with ideas to the table, but instead of creating the super fancy spreadsheet and PowerPoint saying, good luck and we'll see you, we create a good enough plan, right? My decks are not that fancy, right? My spreadsheets are, they work, but they're not like the fanciest spreadsheets. But then it's like, now let's work together for the next 3 weeks on implementing this. Let's practice for this PD. Let's role play questions you might get. let's strategize about how you're going to approach this curmudgeonly teacher who you know is going to oppose this idea beforehand. And so we work on some of those issues. And that, I think, radical candor is often a place that people will want to focus, because once you have a building and a culture where people directly can challenge each other, I knew that was going to happen. So once you've got a building where people can challenge each other, then you can really start to move mountains, right? Because people are able to really be honest about what they're thinking and feeling, where their concerns are, how those lie. And then that really allows you to move any change forward that you need to. So,
by the way, brilliant move. Brilliant. That was just seamless. Totally cool. You knew this was good. We talked about this. For those, if you're listening to the podcast, you have no clue what you just saw, but
you can see the do not disturb sign on the door to mom's office.
Totally saw it. One of Beth's kids came in, and without missing a beat, Beth just kept it moving and just handled whatever it was. And gracefully so.
Screen time restrictions on YouTube we ran up against, so you know.
it happens. So,
you know,
real quickly before we go, my friend, I've just really enjoyed our time together. So I'm going to do the burning building scenario. The building is burning, God forbid. Your entire Bruce Springsteen collection is in there. All of the kids are safe. All of the family
heirlooms are safe. All the living people. Okay.
Insurance is all great. You know, no one has been hurt. But what are the firefighters like? Man, Beth, your Bruce Springsteen collection's getting ready to implode here. I only have room for three albums. What are the three albums that you want the firefighter to go in and save?
I think I would have to say Springsteen on Broadway, because I think that show was unbelievable. And to your point earlier about adaptability, I think Bruce takes some of his songs like Born in the USA and does them totally differently based on the context of, I think the first show was like a 700 person Broadway theater, right? Yeah. And so it looks so different. It rings so different than a stadium. And so I think Springsteen on Broadway is often my go-to on any day, a good day, a bad day, you name it. I would say, I'd have to say Tracks, because that's four albums in one. So there you go.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
Great songs, great rocking. You know, I think I've been fortunate enough to go to a number of concerts where Bruce has played an album from beginning to end in order, which has been really, I've seen The River that way. I saw Born to Run. I saw Born in the USA. And I would really say, I mean, it's a tough call between Born to Run and Born in the USA, because they're both really tremendous albums. And The Rising, I can't leave. I mean, you know what I think I'm going to say is save my phone, and then I'll have my Spotify. So there we go.
There it is.
And I'll have my Sirius in my car. If I have E Street Radio, I am a happy woman. So there's my cop-out answer for that final one, right?
Fair enough, because I get often asked that about the Beatles albums, and then I go, well, you know, I usually will say, well, the Beatles one album, because it's got all their hits, and then Let It Be is my favorite Beatles album. Both Let It Be and I were born on the same day, the same year, May 8th, 1970.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Happy upcoming birthday.
Well, thank you.
I have siblings born on the 7th and the 9th, so you're right in between.
Really? Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great.
There's a friend I went with to the Springsteen show in Brooklyn. She was born on May 8th, so there we go.
See, this is all meant to be.
Meant to be, totally.
All meant to be. So that's usually, and then you know, I wrote a book about Sergeant Pepper, so I mean,
I have to say
Sergeant Pepper. So probably, but if I guess maybe another one. It depends on my mood, you know, kind of like with Springsteen. So his music is very mood driven, and it depends on if you need that kind of dark night of the soul, then you put on Nebraska, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you need to be challenged a little bit, then maybe you go with some latter day Springsteen, like Western Stars, which that's one of my favorites. So Yeah.
I mean, I will also say the Live in Dublin and the Seeger Session albums are unbelievable. So those would be a lot of times when I need a mood boost, put on a little Dublin Seeger Session, and I just am you know, I often will, and East Street Radio will play live concerts, and I do download, he's got a nugs.net does live concerts. And so I'll do that. And I love doing concerts, especially ones I was at, but you know, I will often have these moments where I like, that concert, it was so amazing in 1978. And it's like, well, yeah, Beth, you couldn't go because you were a child. Like, you were an infant. You missed it because you were not age eligible. But I'll sometimes just have a moment where I'm just really sad about that. Like, the great concerts that I just didn't see at Bruce. But I try and remind myself there, God willing, more to come. And, you know, always the magic of technology and saving these memoirs.
Well,
yeah.
Well, who knows? You know, there may be an opportunity where, you know, you're doing a Springsteen workshop bootleg PD, which I got to get on that. I got to visit one of them. And maybe the boss shows up. I mean, you never know.
I mean, I've got plans about, well, if I wrote this book, then could I interview him? And then I was like, could I actually like say anything during this? Like, or would I just like cry, like tears of gratitude, just be a mess. Like, I'd have to really rehearse it. But yeah, no, if you ever know of any, you know, I bring it to conferences and abridged version. I'll do it with schools and districts. So always, any music fans always love this, right? Because it's like, we're going to have PD anyway. And it really does come, you know, sometimes I'll work with leaders and they'll be like, but, you know, well, I'm like a big theater nerd. I'm like, there's the same analogy with putting on a play, right? And the backstage and the cast with an orchestra, with the band. You know, you have to do you. If you are a huge Dead fan, the Dead should be your example, right? But Bruce Springsteen should be my example. This is authentic leadership. The premises are the same, right? It takes lots of people and clear roles and responsibilities around a common vision and purpose. But who it is, that's part of that authenticity. So it does come very, the Springsteen passion is extremely genuine from me. Oh, so
and it is contagious, and we are better and we're better for it. Beth, if folks want to connect with you or follow you or subscribe to your newsletter and those kinds of things, what are those pathways and platforms?
Totally. So one resource I will have up very shortly that is, I think, just great for leaders is like kind of a thank you and a gift to your listeners. It's leadership-quiz.com. Yes, leadership-quiz.com. And it is a short quiz on what you need most as a leader right now. And so that will help give you some answers and hopefully allow you some illuminating paths. And I think then that kind of gets you also on the newsletter list if you choose to, et cetera. And then I also am on LinkedIn at Beth Napleton. You can follow me there, on Facebook at Beth Napleton Consulting, and on Instagram at Beth Napleton. And I have a website, BethNapleton.com, which hopefully you can put in the show notes with the name, definitely, spelling and all of that. But that also has resources. I blog, I put podcasts up that I'm on, some short videos I do. And so I am trying to position myself to do more Springsteen content this summer because the boss launches the European leg of the tour in 6 short days in Barcelona. So I feel like, and one of the, someone on my team goes, so wait, if you went to a show, is that a business expense? And I was like, ah! mind blown.
Wow.
I know, right? So I'm like, wow. Oh, interesting. So that is not why I do it, and I have spent a lot of my hard-earned money on it, but it is, I've always wanted to see the boss in Europe, but I don't know if that dream's gonna happen this summer, but it is just a special, it's a lot of fun. So hopefully there'll be more of that coming. So for the people who really responded, I'm guessing your listeners have some sort of musical affection, right? In some ways to listen to this neat piece, then there'll be more coming on that. And I'm sure more to come because, I mean, the boss is the boss and we continue to learn from him, you know, year after year. So just shows leadership is always, you're always progressing. You're always growing.
Absolutely. When you get that going or need a thought partner or bandmate, and please call me. I see a second and possibly a third visit to the Principal Liner Notes podcast. I would love to have you come back, and then actually I've resurrected another podcast I've worked on. That's that I just dropped the second episode today, the album that changed my life. So
oh, wow.
I need you to get on that so we can talk about what Springsteen album changed your life.
What album? So I like, that's like asking to pick a favorite child, right?
I know.
Like, how can I?
Well, we're going to make this happen.
You're more prepped than the professional one. The professional podcast, I'm like, I got it. But the album that changed my life, I'm like, I know where to start. There's just so many. Well, so
I'm going to hold you to that. But again, my friends, it's Beth Napleton. Please be sure to connect with her on Instagram, and I'll put all or LinkedIn, and I'll put all these things and connections in the show notes. Beth, it has been truly a gift and a pleasure to connect with someone who is an empath for leadership, is an empath for humanity, and is also an empath for music. And I consider you a bandmate, and I am so excited that we were able to have this time together on the Principal Liner Notes podcast.
I love it. Bandmate, I love it. We'll take the show on the road, coincidentally, wherever the E Street Band happens to be playing. Total coincidence.
You know, we that could be another business expense.
I mean, exactly, right? You're like, oh, now that you think about it, okay. So lots to think about.
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. Lots to think about that. Friends, thank you so much for tuning in to the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord with Beth Napleton. Don't forget to share with the world your dreams, your visions, even your music collection, because you help make the world a better place, and the world needs your vision and your ideas and your dreams. There's always a flip side. I hope to catch you there. Happy Record Store Day. Happy Celebrate Monday. Happy Springsteen. And we will, if there is a Springsteen concert, you may see Beth and I, microphones and phones, recording notes and podcasts.
Because it's a business expense. Exactly.
All right. Thanks again, Beth. And thank you all for tuning in to the Principal Liner Notes podcast.